Shaquille, you'll go in my first whistle. Chris, you'll go in my second whistle. 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Digital Outbox. Joining me again is Shaquille. Hi, Shaq.
Hello.
And Chris. Hi, Chris.
How's it going? You alright?
Not too bad. How is everybody?
Very good, thank you. Yourself?
Good, good. Well, I've made myself a fanboy this week after a SharePoint course. I've been turned.
Sounds intriguing.
Oh, the guy who took us was absolutely spot on, but what a Microsoft fanboy. I thought I was bad, but he was even had a little Bill Gates badge. It was fantastic.
Did he have a .NET t-shirt on?
I think underneath. I think it was more like a vest type thing, you know, because kind of Microsoft guys wear vests.
Probably pants.
did he come onto the stage a whooping and a hollering?
No. And he didn't have big sweaty underarm things either. That's the one.
He's not even trying then.
No. Oh, well, no, he was trying. Anyway, that sounds wrong. So we've got a little bit of feedback from last week. I think, Chris, you want to...
Yeah, not so much feedback as an apology to the residents of Portsmouth, really, who I kind of insulted by, you know, slurring their name when, you know, in fact, the Portsgrove riots, they only firebombed people's houses, made people flee their homes, you know, innocent residents and things like that, had five-year-olds holding placards, when it was actually the people in Newport, Wales, that forced a paediatrician out of their home by confusion over a job title. So apologies to the people of Portsmouth.
So it's the Welsh that are the big issue?
Yeah, it's the Welsh.
So basically, Brian, if you're listening, it's folk like you. And we also heard from Tam Shaquille.
Yeah, our very own Trish Takanawa wannabe, Tam, has come back with some tidbit for us. Remember we were discussing that PS3 media server?
Yeah, I had some a few weeks ago, it. Wasn't it?
Yeah, I had some issues with it on the Mac, but Tam's been trying it out recently on the PC, and he says it works flawlessly. You know, he can stream his MKVs with no conversion at all. I think one thing we might have to confirm with him is whether you need a high spec PC or whether it can run on any PC. So, yep, that's good to know there.
Oh, Tam's got loads of money, so it probably is fairly high spec.
Yeah, and he's another bit of information. We've got a new listener, Jim from Scotland. So like to give him a warm welcome this week and hope he enjoys the show again. He did raise an interesting point that we had some volume issues last week. Sorry about that, and we'll try to work on them this week. Hopefully everything will be tip-top.
Well, hopefully Ian will get his finger out and get it sorted.
Yeah. Well, we did have stressful show last week, didn't we?
Oh, awful. And finally from Lewis, who confirmed that, yes, we are Apple fanboys. Although I did point out that we've now recruited Chris to kind of balance it out. And he recommended that we really should look at Windows Media Server. So Lewis has actually built a couple of PCs with Windows Media Server, Blu-ray player on it, and it does everything for him. He's got his movies, he can play back anything, pictures, music, Blu-rays, and high def via FreeSat as well. But it is expensive.
Yeah, I guess some of the problem is that it's not something I actually do on a day-to-day basis. I'm a collector of DVDs, so I don't actually stream anything. That's probably why we haven't had too much information yet on the Windows Media streamers. But this might be something I'll have a look into, and we'll get some balance in there.
Yeah, well, he did offer to loan us a machine if we wanted to take a look.
It's nice of him.
It was very nice.
Very nice.
But Lewis is a nice guy.
We can return it back to him with a Mac OS X.
So let's crack on with some news. First story this week is Facebook bought FriendFeed. Now, I don't know if you guys use FriendFeed at all.
I've registered, but not a regular user at all.
Okay, well, I'll make this one quick. So they bought the team for $50 million in stocks and shares. The FriendFeed team is made up of ex-Googlers. And I guess FriendFeed got a lot of press amongst the kind of tech community, but not really out with that. It was a social network, but it was also a social aggregator. So you could register and then put links to all your other RSS content, so Flickr, blogs, Twitter, podcasts, and it was actually a really nice site. Actually, for me, it was easier watching things coming through from Google Reader and Twitter on FriendFeed than it was on each individual site. And one of the nice things was that as somebody tweeted or blogged, you could then actually comment on FriendFeed. The only problem with that was maybe the actual comments got fragmented. So instead of the conversation happening on Twitter or the conversation happening in your blog, it was, unless you got all your RSS feeds in, it was happening, you know, in a few places. But I loved the site, and it was actually, you know, it was updating in real time. As you had it open in front of you, new posts would come in, comments would come in.
Was one of the issues with that that you had to, any sort of Facebook buddies that you had or Twitter followers, if they weren't using FriendFeed, then there was no point in commenting on stuff?
Originally that was the case, but then what you could do is actually create, if they hadn't registered accounts, one of the features I added in the last few months was you could create an account almost on their behalf. It was like an invisible account, so that you could still follow their content. And it actually worked really well. So I was able to, you know, you could go and, you know, just grab all these feeds and monitor all this. And
it's kind of like Google Reader for social sites kind of thing.
Yeah, it was Google Reader, but it was updating in real time. It had a lot of commenting on it, and it was very quick for actual searching for information. I found it really, really good. And actually, one of the other things that was nice is this concept of rooms. So there was like an Apple room, so you could actually send posts to this Apple room from FriendFeed. I just thought it was really nice. So Facebook have bought them. I guess what's quite confusing is at first everybody, you know, a lot of the people that love FriendFeed were like, "Oh no, that's the site gone." And at first it was a bit ambiguous. And over the weekend, the actual owner is now saying that no, FriendFeed won't die, but we're still working out what the deal is with Facebook. So it sounds more like a talent grab, and it'll be interesting to see how they integrate some of these features into Facebook.
I mean, Google Wave seems like it's going to recreate a similar kind of environment, so maybe it's in readiness to sort of counter that kind of angle.
Well, hopefully, I mean, with the Google Wave thing, I know the kind of the big tech bloggers have got access to it. I guess hopefully, you know, one of us will maybe get access next month when they open it out a bit more.
It'd be interesting to see what it is about.
One of the other things that's interesting is there's also Facebook Lite, which some people thought was maybe on the back of chasing after Twitter, but it seems to be more for maybe where parts of the world where they don't have the same broadband infrastructure.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, so a faster loading set. And I've never found Facebook that slow to load. But some people say it's an absolute dog, but I don't have many of the apps in it. So
I was going to say, it's probably the same people that accept every single app invite.
Yeah. So next story, I guess, following the back of that, was Google Reader got some updates. Fairly small, but I think quite important ones. So one of the things added was a send-to feature, so that you can then send, if you've got a story that you like, previously you could like it or you could share it, but you can now actually send to. So you can send to Twitter, you can send to Facebook, so sending out to one of the other social sites. But you can also add custom send-tos. So over the last week, people have worked out how to send it to a PDF generator, how to send it to Evernote, which is quite nice, and also to, you know, your blog or whatever. So it's quite a flexible tool now.
I guess in the simplest terms for most people, it'd be like, whereas before, if you were browsing the internet or in your RSS reader and you saw a good link, instead of manually copying and pasting that into like Facebook to share, you can do it all within Google Reader.
Yep.
Excellent.
So the one thing for me that I like, and my Evernote's turned into a bit of a scrapbook, and it's not all in there because I've got Little Snapper for, I guess, more the screenshot type scrapbook stuff I take. But for articles that I know I might refer to later on, I actually snap and hold them in Evernote rather than just keeping links. So I've actually got the content there. So to be able just to, if there's a really good tutorial that I've found in Google Reader, being able just to send that automatically into Evernote is really nice. And
yeah, that's something I don't do at the moment, but actually that does now sound more and more useful, and actually that's probably where I'm going to go with it. So that's a good, nice little addition.
Yeah, it's really nice. You can also, I mean, one of the issues I have is if I've been away a couple of days, I come back to 1,000 posts that I need to somehow read. And it was always a bit awkward previously, but now you can just say Mark is read older than a day, so you're just getting like the, you know, the latest news in that day, which at least keeps you. It's a little bit easier to organise. Previously, I just found it a nightmare coming off the back of, you know, like a 2 or 3 days travelling. I just had to almost just like mark everything as read and just start
and then
over.
You miss whole chunks, don't you?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys tried. Google have launched a new search, or not a new search engine, but an updated version of their search engine, codenamed Caffeine.
I don't know if I read about it, but I've not tried it myself.
Yeah, I had a quick go with it. To be honest, I didn't notice that much difference. I mean, the speed seemed to be really quite quick, and results might have shifted. I did a couple of cross comparisons, and results had shifted around maybe one or two places, but I didn't really notice that radical difference.
And that was the same for me. It was much the same, which I guess is what people want, because that's why they're using Google right now.
Google got it right first time, and they're just tweaking around the edges.
Yeah, it seemed to be that part of the story seemed to be it's more the underlying architecture that they're playing around with, and there's been people talking about is it more trying to get into real-time search, you know, try to compete with things like FriendFeed and Twitter and Facebook, and actually get to a point where, you know, if I've posted something, can I actually get that indexed and available in a couple of minutes rather than 4 or 5 hours?
That definitely sounds interesting for, you know, like later stories, because I mean the Googlebot only gets around probably, you know, regular sites once every sort of 3 weeks or so, and sure it indexes the big news sites a lot more regularly, but if it can even get down into blog posts and things like that, that might be quite an interesting development.
Yeah, and something else that is just on the back of that, there's been a website doing the rounds. I guess it was since Bing got some market share, and it's a blind search website, so that the web address we'll put in the show notes, it's www.blindsearch.fegus.com, and in that search, if you put in London or Glasgow, or you've put in a search term, it then brings you back three panes of 10 results from each of Bing, Yahoo and Google, but it doesn't tell you which one. So you can look at it and see what you think is most relevant. And I guess the only thing, and I only tried it maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 times, Yahoo seemed to be more accurate for me. I actually preferred the results, but it's not made me change. I mean, Google's there and it works, and I still get more out of Google than I ever have done out of Yahoo, so I'd still stick to it, but quite interesting.
I wonder if it was someone down at Yahoo that put all that together. I'd be interested to find out if there's anyone behind it.
I think it was a Microsoft guy in his own time. I think it was one of these, and he didn't really want to, you know, there wasn't any kind of spin on it. He just wanted to put it together, and I think he's just obviously keeping the stats in the background, what's coming out.
Blind tasting in the search world.
Indeed. As long as they don't spit it out afterwards, you'll be all right. privacy. So I guess there's a couple of bits to this story. The Palm Pre phones home with your location, which I think it only came out a couple of days after we did the last podcast.
Yeah.
And it seems quite nasty, because there was nothing in any of the terms and conditions you've signed up to that this takes place, and it sends, you know, a lot of information back. But something that's just come out today is that iPhone apps are doing the same. So any of the apps using Pinch Media's tracking is actually sending back your iPhone ID and your operating system, whether it's jailbroken, whether it's cracked and pirated, when you started the application. And I guess what's worse is if you hook into Facebook, it's actually getting your gender, your birth month and your birth year. One of the issues, there's an Apple developer's come out and said this is just spyware, you know, it's no more than spyware, but what it seems to be is it depends on how the actual application developer is making use of this. So they should be declaring that this information is getting sent back, but seemingly there's a few that aren't.
That's the big outcome of this story, isn't it? That I don't think people mind too much the stuff that's coming back. And okay, they might have a bit of an issue here and there, but if you're open and honest and let someone deselect this option, then there's not going to be an issue. Well, it's just the secrecy and the not knowing and that actually puts people off and makes people angry. If it's clear and obvious, you've got tick boxes, I don't think people are so worried.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm sure they're amassing a lot of I guess, a lot of information in the background, you know, to be able to see which age groups are using the apps the most, and there'll be a whole load of, you know, really useful, and it's a bit like the store cards, you know, and Tesco and all that, getting a whole load of information about, you know, who you are and what you buy and what time of year you buy it and all that kind of good stuff.
As an app developer, the information must be invaluable. I mean, it must be amazing to get all that kind of feedback from your apps.
I mean, I'm assuming this information that's sent back, yeah, they've got your gender and your date of birth, maybe, but they can't really link that to a specific person, can they? Like, saying, oh, yeah,
if they've got your location, they pretty much know where you live.
No, but I mean, what if you're out somewhere and you turn your phone on? I mean, each time it sends that information back, does it link it to your actual device as well?
I mean, from what I can understand from the story, it's linking to your iPhone's unique ID.
Right.
So unless they've got elsewhere, you know, that your username or something like that is tagged against that unique ID. So I'm thinking of some of the games when you're putting in a, here's my username, and when you're uploading that score to a scoreboard, is it just putting the username and putting a score, or is it sending in, it's come from this iPhone on this date and time? So I don't know if it's a case of this set of information on its own tells you, I guess, some generic things like, you know, males in their 30 really like TomTom, you know, if TomTom was using this.
I mean, like Chris said, I guess if they were more clear about what they're recording and what they're sending, then yeah, it wouldn't be an issue. Most people probably wouldn't mind.
I think that's the biggest thing. As long as there's clarity and as long as there's an option to turn it off, you know, if you don't want to send it. I mean, as you've just said, every time you switch off and on your phone, you're telling your phone provider where you are. You know, it's contacting the cell towers and I'm saying, I'm here. Moving on, Chris has got a story about Microsoft, which is quite surprising.
Yeah, well, again, it was. This one kind of broke not long after the last story as well, although there haven't been that many developments recently about it. I haven't got an update, but effectively, a Texas judge has ordered that Microsoft cannot sell Microsoft Word in the USA anymore. And that's not just across Texas, that's across the whole country. Can't import it due to an infringement of an invention by a company called i4i, I believe. Now, their invention was apparently something called Custom XML. No one really seems to know what Custom XML is, seeing as XML is an extensible language which you're supposed to customize. But it's the way the open document format stores from Microsoft Word now into an XML format, which was, you know, highlighted as a very good thing for Microsoft to do when they brought it out rather than their proprietary formats they were using previously. But this company's gone after Microsoft. They deliberately went to Texas because the judges there had some previous... they've got some previous, and they actually... Yeah, they pretty much want to go down this route. And it looks like i4i are chasing a big fat check from Microsoft because there's plenty of other applications out there that use the same kind of format to store their document, but they've only gone after Microsoft. But there's no... we don't know any feedback from that, whether this is going to go through, whether things are being appealed or whether Microsoft's going to pay up. We'll see.
I mean, I don't know. I just get fed up. And it's not just these kind of small companies that are coming out of nowhere. The big ones are doing it as well. But see all these patent infringements for some really... I can understand if it's some piece of technology that is revolutionary, but I mean, to turn around and say custom XML is just a joke.
I'm not sure if this is accurate, but I seem to recall reading a while back that some companies make that their business. They look for patents and stuff that haven't been registered properly. That's just... Surely that's...
This company hasn't come out and actually said exactly where and what they use their invention for. Apparently they do use it across a lot of things, including the patent registration process apparently uses their thing. So I don't know what they're trying to protect and where, but there's something weird going on here.
But it's the same... I'm just looking up the story, and here it was at the end of July. A company called... it's a US company called Volumedia. Wanted to patent the word podcast and the technology of podcasting. So they were going to start chasing after... Well, it looked like a whole lot of people were going to start chasing after podcasters. So they said...
I heard it wasn't so much podcasters as much as podcatchers, you know, the kind of iTunes of the world.
Well, all the news article is saying is that they've patented podcasting in November 2003, almost a full year before podcasting began. But the interesting thing is Dave Weiner and Adam Curry responded. They actually created the protocol and the format for podcasting in 2001. So it certainly predates, you know, what this patent was talking about. The interesting thing is the patent, it looks like it has been granted. So crazy stuff like that just ticks me off, got to be honest.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. It's hard to believe that they will stop it being sold, but we'll see.
Yeah. Speaking of crooks, the Pirate Bay.
Yes.
So there's only a... I'll get sued for that, probably. The allegedly crooks.
The shady characters.
Allegedly shady characters. So I think it's only a few days' time that the site will change hands and also change look and feel and change logos. And I don't really know. I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. But there's a torrent became available yesterday, which was the full Pirate Bay Index, which has almost 900,000 torrents linked to it or linked from it. And I think it was something like 21 gig. But basically, you could download this and create your own Pirate Bay. And looking at it tonight, I think there was 6 people seeding, but there was about 1,000 people trying to download download this.
They're probably down in Nigeria somewhere.
Why Nigeria?
I'll get sued for that.
Got this torrent lift. It's just fallen off the back of a lorry.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's only a few days left to grab that, although I'm sure people will be seeding it for days, if not months or years.
It's the final up yours, isn't it?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how Pirate Bay becomes or what it becomes, and also what the guys behind Pirate Bay are going to do. I'm sure they're just going to start up something similar again.
Sure, I think they're going to retire, aren't they? Just go and live on an island somewhere. Yeah, maybe.
Retire in jail with millions of pounds of debt.
Yeah. Well, there's worse things. There's worse things. Right, Apple News.
Yay!
We definitely need a little...
Lift me up.
Need a little sound effect for that Apple News, but just to hack...
yawning?
Just to hack Chris off. So, I guess it's a load of gossip first.
Ooh.
Rumors.
What a surprise. You mean Apple News that's only gossip and rumour? What are you talking about?
Wah, 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 wah.
I just smelled a lot of jealousy there.
I am jealous of your misnews and direction.
Anyway.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
The rumours of a keynote September 7th. Alongside that, there was a video that's come out of what looks like the new iPod Touch. I think you found that first, Shaquille.
Yeah, I saw it somewhere and I posted a link, yep. Looks quite authentic, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, there's been more posts today where they've actually, you know, showed you some Apple 2009 copyrights inside and some components inside the actual alleged new Touch. So it does
look... The geeks were all saying how the motherboard should have all been red. That's what their pre-releases are supposed to have. That's good geek news, isn't it?
I mean, to be fair, when I first bought a Mac, which has come up for 3 years ago now, that nothing used to leak out, but in the last 18 months, almost every keynote's been, you know, usually leaked. I mean, the Fat Nano was shown, and everybody thought the Fat Nano was a joke. They thought, no way can that be the right Nano, and sure enough, it was. And it was funny because opinion was that looks rubbish. It's a Fat Nano. Apple would never release that. Oh, it's a Fat Nano. This is the best Nano that's ever been released. So that looks likely September 7th. iTunes 9, and there's talk of Blu-ray support and... Well, go on, Shaq, you're itching to tell us more.
No, just basically still all rumours, but hopefully most of them will be true. They are talking about Blu-ray support, obviously, and something that's called ARP organisation, so you can reorder your apps around. I'm not quite sure what that means. But I think what I found quite interesting was Twitter, Facebook... and other sort of social networking site integration. And that was like what first day I found that. And then the next day I read something about that there might actually be a bit more to that, which we'll you know, come to later on.
Well, no, we may as well just do it now.
Okie dokie.
So this was the this was like their own social network.
Yep.
So go on, tell us more.
Again, and it'd be quite nice if it's true, but I don't know too much about it at the moment. But rumours are that Apple could possibly be developing their own social networking app for integration with iTunes and iLife, and maybe a bit more. I just can't sort of imagine how it'd fit in. But I mean, certainly for iTunes, you know, uploading to maybe Twitter and Facebook where you're listening to sounds like a nice idea, but could it be, you know, like spamming people with like useless information? Like Ian is listening to Girls Aloud again sort of stuff.
Nothing wrong with a bit of Girls Aloud. As Chris will testify.
Especially the ginger
one.
That's
on my list. Last FM app, I'm going to quickly move on. The Last FM app surely does that pretty much anyway. You know, the website lists, you know, you can...
Exactly.
Link up to it. Can't yeah. You? In fact, mine all gets updated.
And you're seeing things like on Twitter, you'll see people putting up like currently listening to, and it's all from like Blip FM. You know? Yeah. So there is things out there already. I mean, I'll be honest, if people start spamming Twitter with, you know, like every 3 or 4 minutes, here's the next track I'm listening to, I just unfollow them.
Do you remember when I was trying out Boxy and that did the same thing? Yeah. And I didn't even know about that. I think I'd ticked a checkbox on there.
So Boxy is an app that you can use to play back all sorts of media. And I think in next week's podcast, we'll finally talk about Boxy properly because we ain't going to do it tonight. But that had a kind of social friends type aspect. And sure enough, when you went on, and I think, was it your Twitter it went to?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was, because you could see all the different porn shows you'd watched that night. No denial there.
Not an episode goes by without the mention of porn somewhere. No.
Porn and chat just goes hand in
need
hand.
Need a sound for that one as well.
Some cheesy 70s music in the background there. So, I mean, basically, essentially that's what it is. You know, Apple are working on like an... social app. Whether it happens, I'm not sure yet, unless you've dug up anything.
I've just seen the same as yourself. It'd be interesting because it's come out, I don't know, it's like 3 or 4 days after the stuff around Twitter and Facebook and Last FM, which sounded a bit odd and a bit kind of obvious. Whereas this sounds like more we're doing something different. And whether they would tie it in, I don't know, through like a Mobile Me thing or, again, try and leverage that service, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I personally feel that iTunes can do with a bit of a refresh now anyway. It's been the same sort of look and feel for a while. And even, like, the iTunes store, it's quite nice. You can find everything. I think it just could just do with a bit of refresh and maybe could do with a bit of a speed boost as well.
I just never have an issue, but I was speaking to a guy that was on the SharePoint course I was on last week. He hates it. Absolutely detests iTunes with a passion, thinks it's just crap. And also Lewis, when I was talking to him, just thinks it's, you know, dated and doesn't have the functionality of like Media Player on Windows, which I must admit I've played with in Windows 7 and I didn't think it was any great shakes. I didn't think, oh wow, I wish this was iTunes.
Maybe they're more talking from a perspective of maybe a sort of graphical interface, maybe.
Maybe.
Because it does, you know, there's nothing really flash about iTunes, so maybe that's what they want.
Yeah.
I've only moved across to iTunes since the iPhone, you know, being forced into it as as you are.
Give it up.
but actually, I have, since I've, you know, just resigned to it and worked out all its, you know, quibbles and foibles and stuff, I've actually...
There aren't any.
I've come to I've come to find it okay, basically. I still think it's a bit bloated, and this does sound like it's going to bloat even more. I don't know why. I just get that feeling of, again, it's not always responsive. I don't know whether it's just PC integration.
You should be used to that. We're using Microsoft products all the time. apologies.
I shall not be reeled in. I mean, definitely, this all sounds interesting. I mean, like you said, I think that these kind of integrations with Last.fm and stuff work best when you doesn't list everything that you're doing. It kind of, you can choose a track that you think's great and share it. And wouldn't it be nice if iTunes then let you share that with your mates without actually having to download the track, you know?
Well, the nice thing...
Like a bit like Spotify built in as well.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about Last.fm, but is it's almost like a fire and forget. It's there. every so often I'll go in and see my stats and see what else people are listening to, but I don't feel like I need to, you know, it's not like a news thing like Twitter, you know, which is like, no. You know, I will just unfollow people if they just start posting up, but see if this is some sort of tweet what you're listening to, and you just end up with people Twittering, you know, here's 40 things I've listened to tonight. I don't,
yeah, exactly. That's why I think having some sort of built-in thing where it only will list up stuff that you've made an effort to actually mark as something special.
Yeah.
I hope there's something a bit more than just, you know, like listing the song that you're listening to. I hope they, you know, add something a bit more clever, you know, something that'd be useful.
Last week we talked about this cocktail rumour, which seemed to go with the tablet, which was this new media format, which was taking music plus maybe video and lyrics and an album and making it something more. But I just don't want to see another proprietary format kicking off.
No,
you know, that's just a turn off for me. So I guess, and there's been no confirmation about September 7th. I would have thought, I mean, where are we? 18th, 17th today?
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's maybe like, what, in the next week or two that would need to be confirmed if it is happening. The invites would go out. More rumours about the tablet. You again, I think, picked this one up.
Yeah, there are rumours now that it's going to have a 8 to 10 inch OLED screen. That's pretty much it. That's the only rumour I've seen this week.
Well, I think if it was an OLED screen, that would be lovely. The OLED screens look gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I guess sticking with other screens, the thing that I was really chuffed with this week, and I don't even know why I've got an issue. The desktop and the laptop I've got have both got matte screens. And I mean, I saw your glossy screen last week when you were up in Glasgow. It is gorgeous. It's a gorgeous screen, but I just think the reflections would ultimately annoy me, and hence I would choose a matte screen. And it's just nice that for the 15-inch, they've actually brought back the matte screen as an option. You know, I don't mind it. I don't mind glossy, and it would have been, yes, I'd have bought it, but I think just having the option, I can make the choice now, is good.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Why $50 extra, then?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because I thought a few years back... when matte screens were like more common than glossy ones, and wasn't there like the other way around, you had to pay for a glossy screen?
My take on it is I think Apple will make more out of people
going for matte,
because I think it'll be a cheaper product. All I can think is that they're doing some sort of, we're mass producing the glossy screens, or a mass, you know,
that'll be exactly what it
you
is
know, yeah. And this is a special case that we need to do for you, hence you need to pay more. I think it just sucks to me. It should just be a checkbox, what do you want, and that's it.
Absolutely. I mean, glossy screens look really good in magazine articles as well. But I have to say, in my experience of glossy screens, is they can become a pain. If you position them great, then they really make blacks rich and things like that.
Yeah. And that's what I noticed.
If you got the angle very slightly wrong.
On Shaku's laptop, the screen looked... I mean, it did look... The colour just popped. You know,
it's much richer.
It looked lovely.
Can I just add, while sticking with the screens, and I know you've seen this already, I don't know about Chris, the Zune HD... demo with the OLED screen.
Yes, I've got that. We've got a big stuff, but on that under the gadgets and stuff.
Oh, okay.
If you want to just leave it till then, because I think that's gorgeous.
Mm.
Well, we can rattle through this the rest of the Apple news.
Okay.
So we'd covered before about App Store and developers, etc. So Phil Schiller has actually been out talking to more developers. This time it was one of the Panic developers, saying it appreciates his comments, and they're trying their best, and actually seemed to make the guy consider his... He posted up about, I'm not going to use the iPhone and blah, blah, blah. And even after 10 days, he was now feeling a bit foolish because Phil Schiller's emailed him, talked to him, and he's now actually thinking maybe it wasn't that bad after all. But it's interesting, it seems to be somebody so high up in Apple that's actually trying to communicate. That's a bit, I find a bit barmy. You know, why have they got a PR team or a marketing team that are out there doing this? Why is it a guy that's, you know, two or three steps from the top?
Mm-hmm.
Outlook is coming to Mac, which I don't know if it's a good thing. So Office 2010, out at the end of next year. And instead of Entourage, which I've never used, I've just stuck with Mail and iCal. They're bringing Outlook. So I think if you're used to using Outlook at work, then, you know, maybe it's a good thing. And it seems like it's fully written in Cocoa, and they're promising lots of loveliness about it.
I would certainly be interested in trying it, because I do use Outlook at work. I just find Mail, it works, but it just doesn't, you know, like when you're composing a mail, I just find that, yeah, I know it can handle hyperlinks and stuff, but you have to, you know, Outlook automatically recognizes a hyperlink and you can insert in HTML and other stuff, and mail just seems a bit basic. It'd be nice to have like calendar and mail in one sort of app instead of having two separate apps.
One of the big things, hasn't it been, that mail cannot sync with Exchange. Entourage is your only option when syncing with Exchange at the moment, but people have said it's pretty poop interface. It's not.
Yeah,
it's not,
but I tried Entourage and it was almost like here's some bits thrown together, and it's kind of getting towards Outlook. But if you really want Outlook, then go and get Outlook. That's the way I thought about it when I looked at it. But moving on to the, well, maybe not moving on, but part of the next thing is Snow Leopard, and it's got a lot better support for Exchange. Not something I'll be able to try, because I don't use Macs in the workplace. So Snow Leopard has hit Gold Master. Rumours that it'll be out before the end of the month, with August 28th, a rumoured date. And there's been shots of the packaging as well. So, cheap Snow Leopard.
Shots of the packaging.
Shots of the packaging, yeah. So it's a picture of a Snow Leopard on it, funnily enough. So, on to Shaquille's second favourite bit of the podcast, which is gadgets.
And stuff.
And stuff.
Well,
go on, you've been dying to do this.
Yeah. Toshiba. Toshiba finally eats humble pie and moves to Blu-ray. I guess it's no surprise, but you know, it's like they, for so long, they just refused to budge. You know, even like going as far as competing with Blu-ray with their like upscaling DVD players. You know, they obviously had to kill off HD DVD, and then they came up with the sort of terminology saying you don't really need Blu-ray. You know, you can get a really good picture with your standard DVDs by using our upscaling technology. And to be honest with you, other than that initial sort of hoo-ha all about it when they first announced, I've never really heard any more talk about this upscaling technology, because initially they said they were going to add it into TVs and all sorts of stuff, and it's just gone down the pan, really.
I guess we've had a year on since then, but it just looks like it was a PR.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to say stunt, which may be a bit harsh, but I think it was just a crap. Everything we've invested in has just gone pop.
There was basically a thing they were still too proud to admit, right, we're going to let it rest and like adopt Blu-ray. They wanted to sort of, you know, shake their fist at, the at Sony and Blu-ray. So, yeah, they've now conceded defeat.
But totally. Do you think, here's an interesting question, do you think in like 10 years' time, people say HD DVD was Betamax, technically better, but you know...
Well, that's the thing, though, because I think that there was a lot of misinformation flying about. End of the day, they were both storage mediums, you know, both discs, optical discs. Yeah, they had slightly different, you know, maybe technology-wise. I don't think it was such a huge difference, though, because they all used video that was encoded in either VC1 or, what was the other one, MPEG-2, I think Blu-ray initially used, and they moved to VC1 as well. So it wasn't so much as, you know, like in the days of Betamax and VHS where the technology was totally different. It wasn't that different, I don't think. I think it was more to do with, like, licensing fees. They both wanted to control the market, and they just lost out a little bit. So, yeah. What annoys me, though, they're still adamant that saying that the war was necessary. And... I don't think so, you know. Ask any HD DVD owner who's invested a lot of money. You know, they're still quite bitter about it.
Mm.
I won't mention Tam.
Who, a roving reporter?
Yeah. So, yeah, that was some good news there. So
get out.
Can finally let that rest.
Something, so I've got a few links up here. Zune HD, I don't know if you guys saw the video for this.
Yep. Certainly did. Yeah,
it did, just looks gorgeous.
It looks nice, isn't it? It's quite tempting.
Oh, I'm not too sure about how the actual hardware looks, but I don't really care when the interface looks that good. And it, I mean, actually, it's not even just it looks good. It actually looks really usable.
Mm.
And it adds maybe a bit like what we were talking about earlier with the, you know, iTunes doesn't really add too much to music playback, and maybe, you know, Media Player does.
Yeah.
The demo when he was playing back music and, you know, the... I don't know, a whole lot of artist pictures and other bits and pieces scrolling around, a little menu bar on the right-hand side that you could easily jump back into things. The browser that
nice transitions.
Yeah, nice transitions. The browser that was there looked really good. It was searched by Bing.
surprise, surprise.
HD radio. I just, the whole thing looks superb. And then the only thing I think it's a bit cheeky, they're calling it Zoom HD, but you only get the HD if you actually play it back through a TV.
Sure. I think that's, you know, like, you've got to accept on. You'll never get HD on a small screen.
No. No. But I thought it looked amazing. And the fact it's like, you know, $110 less than the equivalent, you know, iPod, or the iPod Touch, sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's superb.
And due to have an app store that's going to be pushed heavily by Microsoft as well.
Ah, it's
interesting. Seems like they're trying to poach some app developers off the iTunes.
Well, what's interesting is that initially they said no apps, but then in the background they've actually been contacting some of the iPhone developers and saying, you know, develop your Twitter app for us, please, and a few other bits and pieces.
There's a new... I know they're calling it the Windows Mobile download store, but there's a new advert out that sort of half harks to Apple, like getting rid of, you know, not letting... rejecting some apps.
Mm.
So they're kind of... They're releasing sort of... why make your programs for this... platform when it's going to get rejected type ideas, and so it's going to be interesting to see how that will develop.
Yeah, and part of me wants to say cheap digs, but then if I go back to the Mac versus PC adverts, that was just, I don't know, 20 adverts of cheap digs, but mostly amusing.
Very funny.
Unfortunately, it's just the only annoying thing about Ozuna is it's not here. It's only in America.
No, not here. Whack a phone in it by the time it gets here, though, and I reckon it'll kick off.
Would that make you shift from an iPhone to a Zune HD?
I'd be very tempted.
Do you think
God
so?
God damn no.
I mean, I don't know how much you've invested in, you know, in apps and...
Yes, you do. I told you last week, £180.
Sorry, I was talking to Chris there.
Ah, right, okay, I'll shut up.
Not that much money.
No. I mean, I think Ian and myself and, you know, we've got, not money-wise, but just in terms of, like, setting everything up and having everything just right. I mean, it'd have to be pretty special, I think, when it comes out for me to switch over.
I wouldn't do it unless I could see some good reviews and whatnot. But if my time's up on, you know, my contract's on the iPhone, I'm definitely going to have a look around. It's not like I'm going to blindly go into the next iPhone.
Of course you are. You're going to jump to it as soon as it comes out.
We'll see.
I guess
there's a
couple of interesting things from my perspective. Even if the device was lovely, and it does look lovely, and I think it'll probably get great reviews, probably, like, you know, best media player. And it'll be interesting to see how it compares with any updated iPod Touch. There's no Mac client. So there's only... The Zune software is Windows only. So for me, that's a fairly big barrier for entry.
And for the other 5% of Mac users.
Yeah, but you could say that's a, you know, but
I'm joshing.
Yeah, but it is still an issue. And certainly when the first iPod came out, it was the same. I really wanted, Shaki will tell you, I really wanted an iPod when it came out, and it was Mac only. And at the time, I wouldn't move to a Mac because I was doing so much gaming on the PC that it was like, well, tough. I can't move, no matter how good the hardware is. And that's the same just now. If it came out with a Mac client and it was really good. But the only other problem I've got is I've invested so much now in apps. I wouldn't rebuy them. I'm not going to, you know, rebuy portable apps the same way as I've done with the iPhone. I'm kind of there at the moment.
No, but I think you've probably pretty much learnt which apps you do need to buy and which ones you don't need to buy.
Yeah, that's why I keep buying
apps
every week.
I've certainly had a bit of a learning experience. I mean, again, the outcome for me of this story is at least there might be some competition for, you know, the Apple alternatives here, which is good for everyone. And with Android bigging themselves up and actually seemingly doing some really good jobs with their latest handsets with the HTC and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, good for, well, it should be good for everyone.
Oh, no, definitely. We need competition. We're seeing it all over the place. One dominant player doesn't make sense. Just a little funny to end on with our gadgets and stuff section. PSPGo.co.uk. I don't know if you... So the PSP Go, I think, is it mid-10 September it's out?
Yeah.
And so if you go to that site, you'll see it's registered by Nintendo. And it's a great advert for the DS and the DSi. So I don't.
It seems like a, you know, I'd jump in on that kind of space, but well. Why have they done it? I guess it's good advertising. We're talking about it.
Because we're talking about it. It's a nice. I mean, what will it cost? £10 for the domain? And then they'll just throw up whatever they've got in their main DS site.
Mm. And when they come with a legal to, you know, documents to try and take it back, then I guess they just let it go.
Yeah, exactly. It's a cheap jab.
See, while I was up in Glasgow this week, my nephew's got a DSi.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you've ever considered, because you've got a DS, haven't you?
Yeah, but I never
upgrading. No. It's actually a pretty nice bit of kit. And camera thing, yeah, it's not a fantastic camera, but it's good enough. And there's things that you can do with, I mean, just like draw on somebody's face. It's actually really, really good. So my brother's been messing about with it, drawing like Heihachi hairstyles and, you know, like raising out his hair, you know, hair at the top. It works really well. Tempted to get one.
Pick up and play fun.
Yeah.
And I guess that's maybe why there's a desire to get a phone on the iPod Touch. Not a phone, a camera. You know, maybe actually seeing there's quite a lot of applications out there.
I'm surprised they haven't done it sooner.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's so obvious.
And there's so many apps and there's so many things. It's like I'm at home and I want to, you know, take a picture and upload it in Wi-Fi. That could have been your pick this week.
What's that?
The DSi.
Maybe it will be.
Speaking of picks.
Yep.
I'll do mine first. So, it's an iPhone app and it's Copilot, which is a sat-nav app for the iPhone. And I guess it's going to get a lot of attention over the next sort of 2-3 weeks. I'm trying to remember the name of the first one that came out. Was it Navigon?
Yeah, something along those lines. Right.
Which I think came out at about sort of £40, going up to £50, going up to £60. They seem to do some, you know, buy it now before it goes up and then buy it now again before it goes up. And I think it's now in a sale price just now. Copilot came out about a week and a half ago. I guess the best thing about it for me was it's £26, which, although dear for an iPhone app, is really cheap for sat-nav. I picked it up last weekend. I was down in Bath and Bristol for a course through the week. And to be fair, out of three journeys down there, and the nice thing is, instead of just using it in Glasgow, it was using it in a place I don't know. Out of the three journeys, it worked a treat. Never let me down. I guess like every other sat-nav app, you can enter in the destination by postcode, street name with a number, but you can also do points of interest, so you can say select Bristol and you can say airport, or you can pick a hotel, or you can pick the museum. So it was dead easy to actually just pick out places rather than having to know their address. You can store homework, recent and faves. It's got a thing about, you know, once it's actually hooked on to where you are, you can say give me local gas stations or give me a hotel quickly. I actually thought the graphics on it were quite smart, so you can do 3D and 2D views. They look really clear. The only thing I did notice is as you pinch with it, it's really slow to move in and out, but I don't think that's something I would do, you know, if I was in the car. I wouldn't be wanting to pinch in and out. It's maybe only when I was walking or before I was actually, when I was trying to pick where I wanted to go.
Yeah, I found I wanted to have, I mean, I bought it as well, and I think it's a bargain and definitely good value. But yeah, when I enter my destination, I want to see an overview of the route, but it doesn't seem to give you that. It just might be that I haven't found it yet.
Yeah, I couldn't
but
I'd really
like to see an overview of the route before actually getting onto it, just to see where roughly it's going to take me.
That's the thing I couldn't really find either, and I didn't know if it was due to the interface. One of the things I found odd was the interface is a sat-nav interface and not an iPhone interface. So it felt like I was using an actual sat-nav application, which I know, you know, somebody listening might think, well, duh, you've bought a sat-nav. But, you know, if you look at all the other apps, they've all got an iPhone-type interface.
I quite like that fact, especially as, you know, everything was big and pressable.
Oh, definitely.
You know, the keyboard's a bit rubbishy, but I like the big clunkiness of it.
Oh,
I
mean, the buttons, all that kind of stuff was really good. And, you know, if I was driving in a car, it wouldn't be too hard to press a button to actually do something. It's also got some live services. So there's live weather. So where you are shows the weather for the next 5 days. Roadside assistance, I've broken down, get in touch with the AA and tell them where I am. And live link, which I've not had a chance to test, but certainly me and Chris will maybe test it over the next week.
I don't think it's up and running yet. It wasn't last time I looked.
Oh, well, it was at the weekend. I've registered and I'm there, and it's. But I need a friend. please be my friend.
Yeah, okay.
And what you
does
can do with that...
Does it warn you about speed cameras, did you say?
It doesn't at the
yet.
Moment.
Okay.
They have said it's coming as an update.
So it warns free, you... Though? Yeah. Okay. So it warns you about speed. So if you're speed, okay, if you're doing, like, we were doing 45 and a 30 and it popped up an audible warning and said you're going too fast kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't tell you speed cameras yet, but they've promised that for the next update. The live link, the way that works is you should be able to allow your location to be broadcast to friends or other people that have got, you know, an iPhone. What I was quite impressed with, I was really worried about the GPS picked up, and certainly at the start it seemed to take a while to lock on. After that, I didn't really have an issue. The first time I used it, I was using a printed out Google route, which took us in a different direction to the co-pilot had suggested. We turned off, and within about maybe 3-4 seconds, it had recalculated the route and got us onto the same route, which I think, for me, I think that's more than acceptable. I don't see an issue with that kind of performance. I've noticed some people complaining, saying that their actual TomTom, if they go off route, takes milliseconds to recalculate.
Yeah.
I don't see why I need...
When is a millisecond crucial?
I don't see
a
millisecond.
It's not milliseconds, at least a second or two. Yeah. Because you get a little progress bar and it goes, zoop, and it takes about 2 seconds.
And we were the same. You know, progress bar, 3-4 seconds, and we're our way. I don't think milliseconds would have made a difference there.
No.
It sounded like a bit of a fanboy having a complaint.
Unless you're driving away from the police or something like that.
It's got lots of language.
The one issue I have with it, Ian, is that if you stop for longer than... I don't know the exact time. It's maybe 20 seconds. I found that it thinks you've come to a stop and therefore it seems to power everything down.
Right.
If you're stuck at a junction for a little while, it doesn't kick in straight away again. So, you'll know where you're going at that junction, but if there was another one straight after, it does actually take a few seconds to kick in. And I believe that's another thing I read in their comments that they're going to be addressing with their free update.
Yeah. I mean, there's... I've got to be honest, I never really noticed it, but then when I was driving, most of the time I wasn't in that kind of situation where there was a lot of stop-start. I've got to be honest, I'm not a big sat-nav user, so I wasn't used to actually looking at it, if you know what I mean. I was more just using the voice as a guidance, which worked really well. It's got multiple voices in it, which I found all much of a muchness. There was nothing particularly stunning about them or nasty.
Can I just ask, have they mentioned anything about... map updates, like
no.
Okay, because I know that the TomTom they charge, I think it's around £45 for a new map.
And I don't know. There's no mention on maps. And one other thing I've noticed is that if you go into live services, live traffic is there as a button, but it's greyed out.
Right. Okay.
So I wonder if that will be some sort of in-app purchase. You know, if you want traffic, then you might have to pay, I don't know, a certain amount a month or something
like
that.
It certainly isn't the TomTom, you've got that option and it's paid for, you have to pay for it.
Yeah, so there was no mention of it, but I'm making an assumption there. But overall, I can't really fault it for the price.
No.
It didn't let me down. I thought the interface, I don't know, just had a bit of, the keyboard in particular, I had a real, it's not QWERTY.
I think they're addressing that as well.
Yeah, so it's not a QWERTY keyboard. It's like, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I just found it a bit awkward to use. And it's not an iPhone keyboard. So it is their own keyboard that they've drawn out.
It's like the change to letters and numbers swaps places when you hit it.
Yeah.
You know, silly things like that.
Yeah. And that's, and as you had mentioned, there's no speed cameras, which again is promised the next update, which is a free update. But for me, being a light user, £26, I think it's fantastic.
So you were obviously in a car with somebody, weren't you, when you were using this?
Well, twice I was in with somebody else and once myself.
So would you be able to recommend like a car mount thing for this?
I've not bought it yet, but I know which one I'm buying, and Chris knows the name because I can never remember the name.
Brodit.
Yeah. So I'm going to be buying a Brodit mount. Because it looks ideal. One of our good friends, Brian, recommended it, the Welshman. He thought it was he just thinks it's a great mount kit for it. So I think it'll only cost me about £30.
Can I ask then, is it just like a mount with a charger in it and not like a, you don't get hands-free thing built in?
It's a mount you can buy it, I think, with a charger, but I'm going to buy the mount and the thing for the car, but without a charger, because I've already got a charger that plugs into the cigarette lighter. But there's space to accept the charging cable.
Right, okay.
So that's why I'm only going to be, I think I'll be spending, I think it's about £35-40 in total. and that'll be me sorted.
Yeah, I just use the Belkin FM transmitter, which is only meant for iPod, but the iPhone just about fits in.
Yeah.
And that just whacks in your cigarette lighter, and it holds well in my car. And if it does in my car, it probably holds in everyone's. So
cool.
It's a bit rustic. So yeah, that's how my solution. I think it's only 20, 25 quid, something like that, for that transmitter. And then obviously you can play it through your stereo as well, the voice.
No, that sounds good. I guess what will be interesting is today TomTom's software came out. So for UK, it's 60 quid. For the UK maps, it's 60 quid. And for if you want the European maps, including UK, it's 80 quid.
That's a shocking price, to be honest with you.
It's the price of their software across their other platforms. So
no, but in terms of last week, we thought that a brand new user coming along, they're going to have to buy the software. And then if they want like the mount thing, they'd probably buy the TomTom mount. And that's, what, 127, something like that?
Yeah.
You're looking at, you know...
Yeah, that's what we made the mistake of last week, wasn't it? We thought that 120 quid included the software. Yeah.
At least like 180 quid for the whole thing. And seeing the fact that I think my TomTom 710, I don't think it cost me that much. And you got everything there with it.
Mm. Yeah. I think that was part of the issue that always felt that they couldn't undercut their own business.
No.
You know, they're not going to turn around and say, iPhone users, you've already spent enough money. Here's a way of buying our stuff and undercutting our core business. But at the same time, they will have to compete. I don't think Copilot, looking at the reviews that I've seen for TomTom today, and there was some really bizarre five-star reviews, you know, at 6 a.m. this morning from folk that had, I don't think they'd been out within using it at all. They'd switched it on and said, this is the best app ever. You know, those kind of things. I think it will get great reviews. It looks like a really good, solid piece of software. But
60 quid compared to 27 quid, is it? 26 quid for Copilot?
26, and I can't see what that doesn't do for me.
Yeah.
You know, I agree, but
I still think there's plenty of people that will go with the brand.
Oh, they'll go with the brand.
They know and have been using it. They're still going to sell it. And 60 quid is the same price that they sell on the Windows Mobile.
And it's the same reason that, you know, people will argue that we go and buy Apple products. We're going with a brand every time rather than going with what is the best hardware. I don't necessarily agree.
No.
You know, but when you compare things like, you know, like a Zune HD, you know, if you're sitting with both of them in front of you, and you didn't have, you know, issues. If you were a brand new user, weren't tied to an operating system, didn't have any music, didn't have any, you know, app spot, and you're looking at what is the best product, it looks like the Zune HD might be coming out as a winner.
Yep.
Anyway, so Copilot, definitely recommended. And hopefully we'll be able to, I don't think any of us will be buying TomTom, but it'll be, I think over the next week or two, we should be able to, you know, you'll be able to see the reviews, and actually there will be people that will have all three or four sat navs, and we'll get a bit of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, over to you.
Yeah, my pick for this week, since I didn't have one last week, I thought I'd just highlight something I really look forward to every 2 months or so, which is the Adobe Edge newsletter. And the reason I really like that is because there's a section in it called The Edge of Flash. And there are some pretty amazing pieces of Flash application and coding and creativity that are highlighted every time this newsletter comes out. And it's just worth having a look at. So in the show notes, we'll put a link to where you can find the archive of the Edge newsletter. And I just recommend that you have a look around. And also in the show notes, I've picked out a couple that I think are just stunning bits of creativity, really, made to view in the web browser and you enjoy them.
I've just looked at that music one that you've linked to, and it's pretty mind-blowing, actually.
It's amazing, and it gets better, and it's one to watch with, you know, full sound and just maybe a fairly strong computer to keep it running. I haven't tried it on a low end, so I don't know, but that's what you'll find with lots of them. They are fairly big downloads, but most, you know, if you go back through the archives, just have a look around, because if you're into anything like that, you know, if you like developing, it's quite inspirational, really.
That's a really good pick, because it's, got to be honest, not something I've seen or heard of before.
Yeah. I'll have a look at that.
And Shaquille, I don't know if you've got a pick, because you were
visiting. I'm all out this week, I'm afraid.
So out the loop.
All I can say is eat well and stay healthy.
Hey, me?
No, everybody.
Oh, you know. Right. It's just my paranoia.
Yeah.
So, that's us done. A lot better time than last week.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You'll find us on our website, www.digitaloutbox.com. If you've got any feedback, Any tips, anything that you'd maybe think we should be looking at based on the content today, then info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter, Digital Outbox. Although we don't really make too much use of that.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, post a little bit more. So, Chris, where can we find out more about you?
Well, yep, Twitter, Cheesy UK, and my blog's at chrishutchinson.org.uk.
And Shaquille.
My blog is at shaquillename.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Shaqen, and on Facebook, my username is Shaquille Naim.
Fantastic. And my blog is iand.net, and my Twitter account is Shweepa. And that's us, episode 10, double figures. Done. So I'm trying to work out when the next big anniversary is. Is it 25? Who's clicking their pen again? Who's the guy that says, I don't click my pen?
You can't hear that.
Oh, yes, we can.
Oh, yes, we can.
And I ain't going to edit it out either.
I was trying to fill in that silence that was there.
Anyway, on that note, we'll say goodbye. Ta-da.
Bye.
Go on, click your pen. I don't click my pen. Did I really click my pen? I don't think so.
Right then, I'm going to click stop.